Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives, as usual. And, Jim, when you look back at the 2010 midterms, one of the great things that happened as a result of that, in addition to Republicans taking control of the House of Representatives, was the number of quality Republican governors that got elected in critical states and who immediately went to work on major reforms that were very tough to get through. Some of them actually didn't get them through. Others did, like Scott Walker taking on the unions. John Kasich did it to some extent. Rick Snyder did it to some extent. And other governors around the country really rolled up their sleeves and went to work on substantive policy issues. And it looks like we've got at least one more out of the industrial Midwest in Bruce Rauner in Illinois. Obviously, that was a Democratic stronghold that suffered through the Rod Blagojevich disaster and then the Pat Quinn disaster. And Rauner won on election night fairly comfortably. In his first State of the State address last week, Rauner proposing creating right-to-work zones and banning political spending from public sector unions. The legislature is dominated by Democrats, so it's not clear how much of this agenda he can actually get through. But as long as executive orders are popular these days, Governor Rauner has signed one allowing state employees who wish not to support union activities, i.e. spending on Democratic campaigns, to stop paying union fees. And, of course, the unions are going apoplectic. So we say, attaboy, Governor Rauner.
You know, I just want to observe, our opponents, we get accused of overreacting or hyperbolic language or things like that. Here is Mark Brown writing in the Chicago Sun-Times. Now, remember, this is a executive order who says if you're a state employee, you don't have to pay your union dues. Now, if unions are such really fantastic ideas, you'd figure everyone would be really happy to pay their union dues because they're getting a great deal with these union leaders negotiating on their behalf, you know, so. First of all, they lament his use of an executive order to impose his will seemed to catch everyone off guard. I'm guessing they haven't watched anything in Washington lately, huh? Then it says it took AFCSCME, Council 31, more than an hour to come up with a response before calling Rauner's move a blatantly illegal abuse of power. Totally unlike the amnesty thing. That's hunky-dory. But then here's my two favorite paragraphs. I think a lot of people expected Rauner to come back to the middle after the election so he could govern as a pragmatic and moderate businessman. Now it's becoming plain he's an ideologue who could end up making noted union antagonist Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker look like the late labor leader George Meany. So now Walker is the good guy. Like in this case, attaboy, Rauner. You made Scott Walker, you know, the sensible one to them, you know. It's like bad cop, really bad cop. No, I'll go back to I'll deal with Scott Walker. He's reasonable. But then you're like, oh my God, this is the most hyperbolic column of all time. No, it gets better. My first thought upon learning of Rauner's move was of Fort Sumter.
Oh.
And the cannon shot that signaled the beginning of the Civil War, not to suggest anything so momentous, even though this columnist just precisely compared it to the opening shot of the American Civil War. So there you go. I'm wondering what other secret plans Rauner has up his sleeve. I'm reminded of other speeches where he talked about spoiling for a possible strike from state workers and replacing them, a la Ronald Reagan and the air traffic controllers. Oh, please, do this, state workers. Come on, you know, take that shot. Knock that battery off my shoulder, all right? You know, come at me, bro. We'll see how this works out. But you really got to give it attaboy to Rauner. They're like one step away from like just setting their hair on fire out in Chicago. So it's kind of a, no lack of bravery on the part of this governor.
Bad PR move by AFSCME. How many, analogies can you burn in one press release? You got to figure it's going to be something else you disagree with. Are you saving the Nazis for the second thing? I mean.
Godwin. They're looking the fine print on Godwin's law right now.
All right. On to the bad martini. President Obama sat down with Matt Iglesias of Vox. Let's just let that sink in, first of all. The president of the United States was that close to Matt Iglesias. But anyway, the president was talking about national security, and this is the line that has a lot of people howling mad today.
My first job is to protect the American people. It is entirely legitimate for the American people to be deeply concerned when you've got a bunch of violent, vicious zealots who behead people or randomly shoot a bunch of folks in a deli in Paris.
And of course, Jim, what everyone's pointing out in response to that is there was nothing random about it.
Yeah, I mean, at first I was sitting there thinking, like, does he mean that the shots, but they weren't fired randomly, right? But they, you know, in the Morning Jolt, I'd written a bit about how Hillary Clinton doesn't do tough interviews anymore. In fact, doesn't do many interviews at all. And you got to wonder if at some point that's kind of getting her instincts a little bit rusty. If you're always filtering everything through this very constrained and very guarded and very edited and focus group tested message shaping process. But, you know, sometimes you can actually see a politician get in trouble in the friendly interviews. And this one is, you know, I think a kind of a classic of the genre, because as much as somebody say, oh, he misspoke, but as you point out, there's nothing random about it. It was designed to kill Jews. My colleague Jonah makes this really good point. Like, even if you wanted to say, you know, oh, how do we know? Well, except the perpetrator said he wanted to kill Jews. His motive is not in dispute. And you put this in the context of the Fort Hood shooter being classified as workplace violence and things like that. We have now reached the point where about a week after telling American Christians they have to get off their high horse, the president of the United States is effectively arguing with a terrorist about what his real motive is. This is one of those moments where you just – I feel like this, the world's spinning off its axis. We've got a president who is – elsewhere in that quote, he basically says, well, it's like the crime rate. You know, you got to, in the same way of a big city mayor, has got to cut the crime rate down if he wants that city to thrive. So he makes this, you know, idea. There's been a long time where people in our world, conservative bloggers, conservative folks in social media, contend that Barack Obama is an anti-Semite. I don't think that charge should be tossed around willy-nilly or with that really compelling evidence. This one suggests, you know, perhaps not anti-Semitism, but a really deliberate obliviousness to what motivates this particular attack, and I think terrorists in general. And the idea that this is something random, like, no, it's just not, Mr. President. Like, the president is going out doing these interviews of, you know, the smartest questions and the biggest dweebs in the room or whatever Vox's slogan is, and kind of saying something just flat out false. And obviously, Iglesias isn't going to correct him on that. Ezra Klein's not going to correct him on that. But somebody needs to correct the president, and it kind of suggests that either he's walking around with a completely misinformed idea of what's going on in the world, which is a terrifying thought. Or the more chilling one is, okay, he knows damn well that this was done in an effort to target Jews, but he doesn't want the public at large to see just how bad the problem is. So he's soft-pedaling it and underplaying it and trying to make it sound like, ah, you know, it's like muggings and stuff. It happens all the time. It's really unnerving. Each week we find something new about this president that really leaves a very deeply unnerving feeling that this guy is still going to be in charge of the country for the next 2 years.
Yeah, well, this is the same guy in September who said the Islamic State is neither Islamic nor a state, and the same guy who told Matt Iglesias in the very same interview that people overhype terrorism and don't worry enough about climate change.
I'd be perfectly happy to bomb ISIS's capacity to generate carbon. I'm cool with that. If that's the justification you guys need, fine, let's go do that. You know, these guys generate too much carbon dioxide by breathing.
I don't think you have any argument for most of our listeners on that one. All right, on to the crazy martini. And some of you are saying, wait a minute, we just had it. It's Matt Iglesias getting an interview with the president of the United
yeah,
States.
Boy, we really got to set the bar with that one.
And so you're thinking, there's no way that something's crazier than that. Oh, yes, there is. There's no way there was a more pathetic liberal interview than what Matt Iglesias did. Oh, yes, there was. Melissa Harris-Perry is with MSNBC. She of tampon earring fame. She was interviewing Attorney General Eric Holder. I assume this is towards the end of the conversation. This really happened.
You know, we call you the duck in Nerdland.
The duck?
We call you the duck. So in Nerdland, we say you have a very sort of placid and even way of presenting, but you are just working for justice underneath. Would you quack for us?
Holder did not quack for Melissa Harris-Perry. Jim, I'm pretty sure this is what Brian Williams calls job security.
Wow. I thought I had a couple of good lines, Craig, and that sweeps away everything. So a couple of thoughts. I mean, during the discussion of the Brian Williams controversy, I kind of said that until somebody reminded me of his central role in hiring Chelsea Clinton, I really wasn't a vehement foe of Brian Williams. And I kind of said that, you know, of all the things I could fix at NBC News, Brian Williams probably wasn't in the top 10 when you compare it to most of MSNBC's primetime lineup, the embarrassment that is Al Sharpton and all that stuff. Is anybody else at MSNBC embarrassed by that? Does anybody else think that this is, you know, obviously their famous tampon earring correspondent, and the woman who said that we have to get past this idea that children belong to their parents, children belong to all. Is anybody minding the store? I'm assuming not, but you could tell Holder was kind of thrown by that. And just the who says I'm going to ask the Attorney General of the United States to quack? I presume like best case scenario, she didn't tell anybody on the staff, and there's no one to say, you know, boss, I'm just not sure that's what you want to do. Or she did, and everyone's like, Eric Holder quacking, it'd be really good television. And I guess we have to give a molecule of credit to Holder for resisting the urge to quack, and motioning for security to take her away. So, it was just, a weird moment. I noted the thing about Brian Williams and his story. It's like the most embarrassing thing to happen to NBC News in decades. And it's got to be like the third or fourth most embarrassing thing to happen to MSNBC this week.
Jim, I don't even know where to go from there.
Yeah, that wraps up our Tuesday, I think. That's good afternoon, everybody. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.